Final Audition, a Marshall James thriller, written by Mark McNeese, narrated by Wondervox AI, synthetic male voice, produced by Mademark Publishing. Chapter 1. Now, New York City. I wouldn't call it a fight, or even a falling out. A realignment, perhaps, a reassessment of sorts. We were not witnessing the end of us that night by any means, but it was as close to a serious fracture as we had experienced in our 13 years together. I'd always known he had a jealous streak, but it was far outweighed by his kindness and his patience. And let's face it, I had not given him a reason to be jealous in all that time. Despite my previous reputation as a hard drinker and a chain smoker before it caught up to me and cost me a lung, my days of easy sex and sweat falling off me to the floor were far behind me. I'd looked at other men since I'd met and gotten involved with Boo, but I hadn't touched one, not even a passing brush of the hand. But this was different. This was me admitting that I wanted to find a man I'd once loved with ferocity, a man who'd saved my life on more than one occasion, and who had surely considered ending it a time or two. "Mac McElroy," he said, when I told him which long-lost friend I wanted to find in a search through the mists of time. "The Mac McElroy?" We'd been watching TV on the couch, his legs draped over my lap while I rubbed his feet. It was something of a routine for us. We would settle in for the night, sometimes with popcorn or snacks, just as often with nothing but our cat, Critter, tucked beside us. Boo, whose birth name was Buford McGibbon, which explained his preference for a nickname, was wearing just pajama bottoms, and I was in sweats and a t-shirt. He still looked amazing in his early 50s, 10 years younger and a whole lot smarter than me. Between being together as long as we have been, and the side effects of age and debilitating chemotherapy, acting on my attraction to him wasn't something I often did. I'd rather ignore the issue than be embarrassed by borderline impotence, but I thought about it every time I looked at him with his shirt off. Tonight I had other things on my mind, however, and I decided it was a good time to tell him my plan. "There isn't another Mac McElroy," I replied, more abruptly than I'd meant to. After all, he'd known about Mac and his place in my life since our earliest days as a couple. I didn't talk too much about the man, but he'd been part of my past, a very big part, and it was inevitable that I would talk about him if I discussed my history at all. Boo sat up, grabbed the remote off the coffee table, and muted the show we'd been watching. He was clearly upset by my bringing up Mac in the context of finding him. "Why, Marshall? You haven't spoken to him in years, decades from what you've told me. You don't even know if he's still alive." Staring at him, holding in check any anger I might have had at his reaction, I said, "Maybe that's the point, Boo. Time is not on my side. Don't say that." I said it because it was true. I'd survived a cancer scare, more appropriately called a cancer terror. It had taken a large chunk of my left lung and given me an inescapable sense of living on borrowed time, although I tended to view it as stolen from others more deserving. Why should I get a reprieve when some kid who's never harmed anyone dies in his parents' arms with a brain tumor? I'd rather give my time to him, or her, or them. I don't believe in heaven or hell, and I don't really care where I go when I die, since I don't think we go anywhere but the nearest crematorium. We're simply lights that turn on for a while, and one day we turn off. Now you see us, now you don't. That's just the way life is, and I was cancer-free 5 years later. But how long would it stay that way? It was this sense I had of time truly slipping away that had made me wanting to find Mac after all these years. Not because I still loved him, though love is a thing that never truly dies. Not because I wanted to leave Boo for him, even if such a ridiculous fantasy could come true. And not because I wanted to say I was sorry, despite having spent over 35 years feeling very much that way. I was sorry it ended in the manner it did. I was sorry I'd been too young to know better. I was sorry neither of us had reached across that divide to touch hands one more time and offer forgiveness, as well as to ask for it. And maybe, no, certainly, telling these stories of our lives in the 1980s, when Los Angeles was an epicenter of so much destruction, so much loss, had brought this man front and center in my mind. Was he alive? Was he in any way the man I remembered? Was he happy? "I'm not happy about it," Boo said, as if he'd seen the word flash through my thoughts. He got up from the couch, sending Critter jumping to the floor. The old cat had been resting between Boo's legs and the back cushion. "I don't expect you to be," I said, But I'm not asking for a divorce. I'm not saying what we have isn't enough. It is. I just want to know if he's alive. It's more than that, Marshall. Ever since you decided to take long strolls down memory lane, a very dark street from what you've told me, you've been maudlin. Maudlin, I said, startled. That's not what I intended. I know it's not. And I know you're obsessed with dying. I'm not obsessed with dying. But we all do, Boo. It's not something anyone escapes. And when it's come as close to you as it has to me, when it's breathed down your neck and made you wake up covered in sweat. I know perfectly well what that's like, he replied. I've been with you for 13 years. I remember the chemo and the fear, all of it. But you're in remission. It would be nice if you lived like it, if you considered the time you've been given a reason to be content, if you can't be happy. I'm both, I said, knowing it was not convincing. I want to say goodbye to him if I can, one more time. What if he's not interested in hearing it? I knew he was telling the truth, saying something I didn't want to admit to myself. Even if I could find Mac, he may prefer to stay lost. I know there's no stopping you, he said, signaling that he'd talked enough and was going to bed. You're as stubborn as a doorstop, and I know better than to stand in your way. You've already decided to do this, and you will never stop thinking you're going to be dead tomorrow. It's the way you are. So goddamned honest and so kind. A sort of sad kindness that could be mistaken for pity by someone who didn't know Boo the way I did. I'm just curious, I said. Oh, bullshit. Curiosity can be satisfied by finding someone on Facebook. I didn't tell him I'd already tried. Mac was not there. This is more than that. You want to hear his voice. True. You want to see what he looks like now. Also true. You want to hold him if that's possible. Ah, shit. And you know what, Marshall James? There he went with the full name business, something he did when he was about to speak to me as a wise one speaks to a child. It's okay. I know you love me. You married me, and that was saying a lot. It was a fact. I'd never been the marrying kind until Boo made it seem inevitable. So look for the love of your life. I started to protest, and he held his hand up to stop me. It's not wrong to say that. We all have one of those. But now I'll never tell you if you're mine. He gave me that mischievous smile that always made me melt. He was not going to storm out, the way I'd stormed out on Mac one too many times. He was not going to sulk or go silent for the rest of the night. Just stay honest with me, he finished. Tell me what you find, who you find, and be prepared to be hurt by it, Marshall. That's just the truth. He was right. When we go digging around in the past, assuming it's the same as the present, we can regret it. But I was willing to take that risk. I didn't want to go to my grave, or in my case, an urn, without having tried to say goodbye to the one man I'd never said it to. I'm not sure where to start, I said. His smile gone, he replied, That's not my problem. Now I'm going to bed. Critter is going with me. We'll see you when you get there. And with that, he left the room.